So I read it through a second time. Didn't get a thing out of it. But I just decided I'm going to stay with it. Third time around, all of a sudden I got to the story of Joseph. And the light went on. And man, I read that story and I sat back. I still remember in the basement of that little house in Lemoyne, sitting back and thinking about Joseph. And I got excited. Wow, what a story. You talk about intrigue. You talk about suspense. You talk about action. Boy, it's in that story. And here's this Joseph. Well, we're going to talk about Joseph this morning. By the way, the one thought that came to my mind was this. I could be like Joseph. I just have to do the same thing he did. You know, that's why these stories are in the Bible, is to somehow inspire us to do these things and get close to Jesus so we can be what God wants us to be. So at any rate, we're going to talk about Joseph this morning. You know, he's one of the men that's mentioned over there in Hebrews chapter 11. And it talks about Joseph there. Did you know that in the Old Testament, especially in the first five books of the Bible, there's more said about Joseph than anybody else in those first five books? Did you know that? That's kind of interesting, isn't it? Well, who is this Joseph? How did he get into this book anyhow? Well, let me tell you a little bit about Joseph. If there was ever a kid that should not have made it, it was Joseph. You talk about coming out of a dysfunctional home. He came out of a dysfunctional home. You know, his dad was a polygamist. He had not one but four wives. And I'll tell you, folks, it never pays to have more than one wife. Those women fought and fussed and argued with one another, and they had 13 children. He had 12 boys and then one girl. And they just fought and argued and scrabbled with one another. What a mess. But there's one thing they all had in common. They hated one of their brothers, and his name was Joseph. They hated him with a passion. Now, they had their reasons. Number one is that he was his dad's favorite kid, you know. I mean, this kid got all the glory and all the honor, and he got all the new clothes. And while they were out working, you know, this kid hung around his dad, and it looked like he was destined to become the next leader of the tribe, and that didn't go well with them. Another thing was is that he was always tattling on them. Every time he saw them do something wrong, he'd run to dad. And he'd tell dad, and they got into trouble. And, you know, nobody likes that. And then he'd have these crazy dreams, you know, and then he had the audacity to tell his brothers about his dream. You know, I dreamed that one of these days you guys are all going to bow down in front of me. Boy, I'll tell you something, that didn't go over at all. And so they did, you know, they hated him. They thought, man, if we can get rid of him. And then one day suddenly their opportunity came. They were out herding their sheep. Well, Joseph was at home with his dad, with his coat of many colors. They'd been gone for some time, and dad was getting concerned, so finally he decided he'd send Joseph out to see where they were at, check up on them. And Joseph went out, and he went out to Shechem, and they weren't there, and so they went on to the Dothan, and there he found his brothers, and he was so excited. Oh, he found his brothers, but they weren't excited to see him. As soon as they caught a glimpse of him, oh, here comes the dreamer. Oh, brother, you know, and their emotions boiled up until finally they went into a kind of a feeding frenzy. And they were going to kill him. And if it hadn't been for Reuben, he would have been dead. But Reuben confessed and said, no, let's put him in this well. Let's just keep him there and just let him die in that well. So they did. They put this kid in this well. And then they all sat around and ate. I don't know how they could eat hearing all those screams and holler, you know. One, let me out of here. Let me out of here. But after a while, their reason came back and they began to think to themselves, you know, we're in tough trouble here. Boy, what are we going to do? We can't kill him. That's not right. But if we pull him out of that well and let him go home, he's going to tell dad and we'll really be in trouble. And they were sitting there discussing this when all of a sudden they saw the answer to their problem. It was an Ishmaelite caravan. It was heading toward Egypt. And they thought, We'll sell him, make some money, and get rid of this pesky brat forever. You know? So they pulled him out of the well, and despite all of his pleas and his crying and everything, they sold him to the Ishmaelite traders. Good riddance to bad rubbish, they thought. You know, how would you feel? One moment, you were your dad's favorite son. You know, he couldn't do anything wrong. And the next morning, moment, you were on a camel heading for oblivion and who knows what. But you know, it was there on that camel, bound hand and foot, that Joseph did something that affected his life for the rest of his life, and it actually wound up affecting the world. You know what he did? In the book Patriarchs and Prophets, it tells us this. I like that book, Patriarchs and Prophets. I've read a lot of books on Joseph, but the best is that. You read it. About 2 days after he'd been bound hand and foot on the camels, the camel caravan went right near his father's campfire. He could look off in the distance. He could see the smoke. No way he could get over there. But he saw it, and it just broke his heart. He just started crying and weeping and thinking, oh, I'll never, never, never see my dad again. Oh, how could my brothers have done this to me? Oh, and he just was weeping. And all of a sudden, this thought came to him. I might not ever see my father again, but I can worship my father's God. And right then and there, he turned his eyes upward, wiped his eyes off with his hands, looked upward and said, oh God, I don't know what this is all about. I don't know why I'm in this horrible situation. I don't know what's going to happen, but what I'm going to do right now is I'm asking you to come into my life and take over. Oh God, I'm willing to be what you want me to be. I'm willing to go where you want me to go, and I'm willing to do what you want me to do. Please come in and take over. Lord, I'm yours. From this point on, I'm yours. Oh, God, I'm yours. You know, when he did that, he stopped being a bratty kid and became a man. That was the first thing that affected his life forever. What a story. You know, folks, I'll tell you, that's where it all starts. Making a decision for Jesus. You know, you can be born and raised as a Seventh-day Adventist, know all this message, and still not know Jesus. There has to come a time in your life when you consciously make that decision. And that's what Joseph did at the age of 17. Well, you follow the story through, and you discover that he gets to Egypt. They put him on the auction block, and he's sold to a man by the name of Potiphar, who happened to be the captain of the king's guard. Basically, he was the head of the secret service of Egypt. And he started out as a lowly servant at the bottom of the heap. He was a nobody. Nobody cared for him, but there he was as a servant. But he did something every single morning. You know what he did? Every single morning when he rolled off of his cot, whatever it was, first thing he did is he turned his eyes heavenward and he said, oh God, I want to give you my life today. Today, Lord, I just want to ask that you'll please come in and take over. I'm willing to be what you want me to be. I'm willing to do what you want me to do. I'm willing to go where you want me to go. Lord, today I give you my life. I don't know what this is all about, but please come in and take over. You know, over here in Genesis chapter 39, we find these amazing words. It says, now when Joseph arrived in Egypt with the Ishmaelite traders, he was purchased by Potiphar. But it says, the Lord was with Joseph and blessed him greatly as he served in the home of his Egyptian master. Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. So Joseph naturally became quite a favorite with him. Potiphar soon put Joseph in charge of his entire household, and entrusted him with all his business dealings. From that day, Joseph was put in charge. The Lord began to bless Potiphar for Joseph's sake. All his household affairs began to run smoothly, and his crops and livestock flourished. So Potiphar gave Joseph complete administration and responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph, he didn't have to worry in the world except to decide what he wanted to eat. You know, it says the Lord was with Joseph. You know why the Lord was with Joseph? Because Joseph chose every day to stay with the Lord. That's why. That's the secret. It's what this whole story is about. Joseph chose every single day to stay with the Lord. Every day he turned his eyes heavenward and he said, "Oh God, here I am today. I just want to ask you to please come into my life and take over. I'm willing to be what you want me to be. I'm willing to do what you want me to do. I'm willing to go where you want me to go." And that's why God was with Joseph. Potiphar began to notice this lowly slaver, and he noticed that he was different from all the other slaves, and that this kid was trustworthy and obedient and loyal, and he did the job. And he began to advance him up through the rank, and pretty soon he became the chief servant. Potiphar turned everything over to him. In fact, in the book Patriarchs and Prophets, it says that Potiphar began to look on this young man as his son, not as a slave, but as a son. But trouble was brewing. Potiphar's wife also began to look at this young man. And she saw this strapping, good-looking, handsome dude, and she thought to herself, "Man, I like him." Notice what it says here. It says, "Now Joseph was very handsome and well-built young man. About this time, Potiphar's wife began to desire him and invited him to sleep with her. But Joseph refused. 'Look,' he told her, 'my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. He's held back nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How could I ever do such a wicked thing? It would be a great sin against my God.'" You know, Joseph knew what the consequences would be. He knew what would happen if he went to bed with this woman. And he knew what would happen if he didn't. He knew. He knew that if he went to bed with this woman... You know, he was a red-blooded young man, had the hormones of a young man. And here was this beautiful woman who was trying to seduce him. And he knew that if he went to bed with her, he would satisfy his natural cravings. But more than that, he would have favor with her. And no doubt she would speak very favorable to her husband. And he might even have more freedom and maybe even get his freedom totally. But he also knew, if he resisted her advances, that he probably would wind up in prison and maybe even put to death. But he said, "How can I do this and sin against my God?" You know, when you have a relationship with God, the first thing in your mind is God. You're not going to turn your back and go the opposite direction. You're going to look at this thing and say, I can't do this because God's here. And Joseph couldn't do it because he had this relationship. Every single morning, he got up and turned his life over to God. Well, she became very angry, and you know the story. She accused him falsely. Her husband had him thrown into jail, sentenced for life. There was no way he's ever going to get out of that prison. You know, I don't believe that her husband really believed his wife's story. If he would have, had him immediately killed. You know, he had the power and authority. But he had to do something. So he took that young man, Joseph, put him into prison. And there he was for 3 years. But you know what's really interesting? Listen to these words over here. Verse 21, Genesis 39. "But the Lord was with Joseph there too. And he granted Joseph favor with the chief jailer. Before long, the chief jailer put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and of everything that happened in the prison. The chief jailer had no more worries after that because Joseph took care of everything. The Lord was with him making everything run smoothly and successfully. The Lord was with Joseph there. Why? Because there in that prison, Joseph did exactly the same thing he'd been doing when he was in Potiphar's household. He turned his eyes every morning when he rolled off his prisoner's cot and said, "Oh God, today I just want to give you my life again. I don't understand why I'm here. Lord, I can't fathom this. I don't know why I was falsely accused, but God, I know you're there. And I know I'm giving you my life. I want to do your will. I'm wanting to be what you want me to be. I'm wanting to go where you want me to go. I'm wanting to do what you want me to do. I'm yours." Every day. Well, the jailer noticed this. He said, "Hey, this kid isn't like the rest of them." He began to advance him up through the ranks. Wasn't long, he became prisoner of the year. Still prisoner, though. Then he turned his whole prison over to this prisoner. He became the chief prisoner, but still a prisoner. And there was no way out. Absolutely no way out. For 3 years, Joseph languished in that prison on false charges. And then God moved. I'm telling you, when God moves, you want to watch out. Next week, we're going to talk about Moses. Here's Pharaoh. "Who is this God of yours?" Boy, he found out, didn't he? I want to tell you something, man. When God moves, watch out. Things happen. By the way, God's about to move in the very near future, too. But God moved. You know the story. Pharaoh had these two crazy dreams. 7 fat cows, 7 skinny cows. The skinny cows ate the fat cows and stayed skinny. 7 ears of fat ears of corn, 7 skinny ears of withered corn. They eat the big fat ears and they stay withered and messed up. He can't figure this thing out. He calls in all of his astrologers and all of his soothsayers and all of his dream breakers, you know. They can't give him the answer. And all of a sudden the butler remembered. "Oh, you know, 2.5 years ago I was in prison and there was a man there. He gave me, he told me the dream, and he also gave the butler, you know, the baker with me. And this kid can tell you what your answer is, what the problem is. He can tell you what it's all about." They brought him out of prison. They cleaned him up. He was, you know, he shaved him, put him on new clothes, brought him in before Pharaoh. And sure enough, he told Pharaoh what it was all about. And Pharaoh began to put a search out to find out who could do what had to be done. He said, "These 7 fat cows, 7 great years. These skinny cows, 7 bad years. The reason you saw it twice is because it's going to start now." And Pharaoh looked around and finally he said, "You know, who could we get that could do this job any better than this young squirt? Let's get him. Let's get him in here and he'll run this thing." You know, can you imagine? I've heard about, you know, vice presidents winding up in jail. You know that, you know. But have you ever heard of a jailbird winding up as vice president? You know? That's what happened. Can you imagine? Here's Joseph. One morning he wakes up, he's in prison, sleeping on this prisoner's cot. He goes to bed that night in this palatial palace. Sleeping on a palatial bed. Oh, I tell you, man. But you know what he did that night? And every day? First thing he did, "Oh God, today I give you my life. I don't understand what this is all about. But I want you to know that I thank you for being with me. I know you're in charge. Father, I want to give you my life totally. You are the master of this universe. I'm yours. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. Wherever you want me to go, I'll go. Whatever you want me to be, Lord, I will be it." And God was with Joseph. Well, you know the rest of the story. 7 great years and then 7, well, actually started into the famine. About the 2nd year into the famine, all of a sudden here comes his brothers. And you know what? They unwittingly bow down to him. and give him homage. And when they discover who he is, they are scared spitless. But you know what Joseph said to his brothers? He said, hey, I know what you wanted to do, but it is God who brought me here and put me in this position. Not you, but God. I'm not holding it against you. He never held it against his brothers. Joseph was a fantastic person. But it came, first of all, he formed a relationship with God. There on that camel at the age of 17. And secondly, is every single day he reaffirmed that relationship by talking to God, by praying. Every day, lifted his eyes up and said, God, today I'm yours. I'm willing to be what you want me to be. I'm willing to go where you want me to go. I'm willing to do what you want me to do. Folks, I want to tell you, the prescription for greatness is to do exactly the same thing. If you haven't made a decision for Jesus, make it. Don't walk out of this church without making it. If you've made that decision for Christ, take time out of your schedule every single day and start talking to him. If you're not doing it, start. And if you are doing it, stay. Don't ever stop. God has a master plan for this world. He has a master plan for every single one of us in this room. He knows who we are. He knows what's going on. And he wants us to be a part of his master plan. But he can only trust those people that are totally committed to him. And that's what it's all about. You get close enough to Jesus so that he can trust you. He's going to pour out his spirit upon you. And you're going to see things happen you never thought could ever happen in your life. Prayer is number one. You know, several weeks ago we talked about Enoch and we talked about what made him great. And the four things that made Enoch great was, number one, is he had this prayer life. Number two is he got in and he learned everything he could about God. Number three is that he fellowshiped with the other Christians. And then as God spoke to him, he obeyed. He did what God asked him to do. And this is important. And I think that we need to incorporate all four of those things in our lives. But the number one thing that we need to do is to start praying. That's where it's at. You know, Daniel, he didn't have anybody to fellowship with. You know, his no brothers, no family. He probably was the only God worshiper there in Egypt at the time. We don't know. But he had nobody else. He didn't have any Bible like we've got it here today to read all these great stories, you know. But he prayed. He talked to God. His father's God became his God. And he communicated with that God. I would say that prayer is the most important thing that any of us can do here, no matter who we are or what's happening. You know, we're told that in the end of time, there's not going to be any church like this. We're going to wind up fleeing for our lives. Preachers are going to go to jail. And we're going to be on little groups, one by, or maybe two or three, or one, you know. And what are we going to have? They're going to try to take our Bibles away from us. Well, what are we going to have? There's one thing they can't take away from us. And that's our relationship with God. We can talk to God every day. So prayer is essential. You know, as you go into this book here, you'll discover that in every case of these great men and women that are in this Bible, the keystone of their lives was their relationship with God. And that came as a result of their communication with God, prayer. Well, here's the story of Joseph. Next week we'll talk about Moses. We'll talk about Daniel. You know, Daniel, he's quite a man, you know. He got there because he prayed three times a day, you know. You ever met a man that was prime minister of one country and the country was overrun and then he became prime minister of the next country? I've never heard of such a thing. You go in the New Testament, there's Jesus. You know, what's really the hallmark or earmark of Jesus' greatness was the fact that every single day he talked to God. He talked to his Father. He talked to him before every great event. He talked to him after every great event. He talked to him when there was no great events. He talked to God. And you know, the disciples knew this. You know, they came to Jesus one day and they said, Lord, teach us how to preach. No, they didn't do that. They said, teach us how to what? Pray. Now, Jesus was a great preacher, but they knew his power came from his praying. They didn't come to him and say, teach us how to perform miracles. No, they said, teach us how to pray. And you know, when they became great prayers, great things happened. Someone once said, no prayer, no power. Little prayer, little power. Great prayer, great power. And you read the book of Acts and you discover these men that turned the world upside down. The thing that made them was they had a living relationship with God the Father and with Jesus. They talked to him on a regular basis. I think of Paul. Man, what a man. But you read his letters and you'll see that he always says, I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you. One day I thought to myself, either this guy is a great prayer or he's a great liar. Folks, he's a great prayer. He was a great prayer. This is what makes people. And this is what can make you and it can make me. Taking time and spending it with Jesus every day. Now, what is prayer? Well, you know, my wife has written a great book. It's called Going for the Gold. And there's one chapter in this book that makes it worth its weight in gold. By the way, if any of you folks are interested in getting a copy of this book, I'd like to read it. Speak to my wife afterwards. But there's a chapter here. It's called Pray to Win. And I want to read you just a little bit out of this here. It says, without good coaches, it is doubtful there would be very many winning athletes at all. It takes someone with an outside viewpoint to see the strengths and weaknesses of an athlete and then inspire, correct, and tune the athlete into a winner. In business professionals, entertainment, and other circles, successful people look for mentors to give them, to help them achieve their goals. Winners know that they've got to have help. It is a paradox, though, that in the spiritual matters, we think we've got to do it on our own. All by ourselves, we try to win over sin and we fail. So we get up and try harder and fail again. What we need is a coach, an expert, someone who knows the game, who knows us and wants us to be winners. We have such a coach. His name is Jesus. He will save his people from their sins. Isn't that fantastic? Jesus is the coach. He wants us to win. So what is prayer? Prayer is basically talking to the coach. That's what it is. And letting the coach talk to us. You know, when I was a kid, we went to a circus one time, and they were doing these trapeze acts, jumping off, you know, coming, swinging on the bars, landing, coming, landing on their feet. And I thought, man, I want to learn how to do that. So we went out to our barn. I was raised on a farm. Had a big barn. So we got a chain, and we got a piece of pipe, and we put this pipe up in the barn, way up there high. Had to get up there with a ladder. And then we put a whole bunch of hay down below. And I got up there, and I started trying to do this flip and land on my feet. Oh, I fell on my face so many times, you know. Soft hay, though. It didn't bother me. I just kept trying and trying. My friends came over. You know, all get up on that bar, and they were swinging, and they come off, and all of us fell flat on our face. Nobody could land on their feet. We tried and we tried and we tried and we tried. But one day, I was out there in the barn after I'd milked the cows. I thought, I'm going to try this one more time. And I got up there on that bar and I started swinging and I came up like this and let go and I landed on my feet. Oh, boy, was I excited. I got back up there, tried it again, fell flat on my face again. But I got back up, I did it, and I was getting it. And finally, I got to the place where I could land on my feet every time. I knew what to do. Boy, I was so excited. I called up my buddies and said, hey, guys, you got to get over here. I got to show you how you can do it, you know. And they all came over, and I did it first, showed them how to do it. And then I started instructing them. I became their coach. And do you know, every single one of my friends eventually got to the place where they could land on their feet. Why? Because I'd been through it. I knew what to do. I told them how to do it, and they listened to me. And that's what it's all about with Jesus. Jesus has been through it. You know, he came down three notches and he became like one of us. The Bible said he was born as a baby, grew up in a man, and tempted, and yet never once did he fail and fall. He succeeded. He always came off that bar and landed on his feet. And he wants us to land on our feet. And he knows how to do it. So all we need to do is get in touch with our coach. And if we will do that and stay in touch with the coach, we're eventually going to become winners like Joseph and like all these other great men and women of the Bible, because God has guaranteed it. Praying is simply talking to your coach and letting your coach talk to you. That's all praying is. Think about that. That changes the whole concept of what praying is about, isn't it? Now, since praying is so important, how do you do it? Well, let me just give you a few tips that I've learned. By the way, you know, I if you want to listen to my experience about how I started praying, get the tape that's called On Enoch. The one about 4 or 5 weeks ago, we talked about Enoch. But I talked about how I started praying 10 minutes a day back in 1964. But what do you do? How can you have a more effective prayer life? Well, let me tell you, the first thing you have to do is you have to decide you're going to do it. I'm telling you, make a decision that you're going to do it, and you're going to do it. I kept telling my wife, honey, we're going to go, and we're going to take a trip down to the islands in the Caribbean. And she said, oh, yeah, I know, you know. And she was very nice, but she made it clear that she didn't believe me, you know. Well, one day we were at a camp meeting. It was hot and dusty. And I got a friend from my call. Got a call from one of my friends, and my friend said, "I'm going to go to the Caribbean." And I said to him, "I am too." I went back to the tent. I said, "Honey, we're going to take a vacation. We're going to go to the Caribbean." "Oh yeah, I know." Guess what? We went to the Caribbean. We had a great time. I've learned a lesson that you decide you're going to do something, you can do it, you know? You got to decide. So make a decision. I'm going to start praying. I want to challenge you to start praying 10 minutes a day. Second thing you want to do is find a nice quiet spot where you can be by yourself. Have a chair. I have a special chair where I go and I sit and I do my praying and everything. You don't have to get on your knees. If you want to, you can. But I have a spot. That's mine. And when I get there, it's kind of like a sacred spot. Third thing you want to do is that you want to do it when you're the freshest. Now, for me, that's early morning. I like to spend an hour or so with Jesus. It's just neat to be able to just spend this with Jesus. But do it when you're fresh. Some of you folks are night people. That's all right. Do it whenever. But just do it. Another thing I've discovered is that it's not wrong to have a list or things that you want to talk to Jesus about. And it's not, you don't have to close your eyes all the time. You see this sheet of this thing here? This is my prayer list for this Fallbrook Church. You know, you people have handed me little slips of paper there and here. You know what I do every day? I open up this list, pull it out, and I start going through these names. And I pray for you folks. All of you that have your papers in here, I'm praying for you, you know? So it's not wrong, but you want to when you talk to the Lord, you want to talk intelligently, you know? And if you've got some problems, you want to talk about them. Let him know what's going on. Kind of imagine that you're in the presence of God. I like to do this. Sitting there, I can just imagine myself coming in before God and bowing down before him and saying, "Oh God, you know, today I want to give you my life. I just want you to come in and take over. I want to praise you first of all and go through this, you know." But the main thing is to do it. Just start. If you're not doing it, and if you're doing it, stay with it. Watch and see what God can do in your life. It's fantastic. But you just have to experience it. Some years ago, well, actually, I started this in 1964. And I was pastoring in up there in the northwestern part of Pennsylvania. Had a district 140 miles long, 70 miles wide. And I had the privilege of baptizing a fellow up there by the name of Ken. Now, Ken lived in a little town called Chippensburg, which was about 60 miles from our church, 60 miles from where I lived. But he went through the Bible studies, was baptized, but he didn't want anybody to know that he'd become an Adventist. He didn't want anybody to know that in this little town of Shippensville. So he just kept it quiet. He was the only Adventist in town. He worked in a bottling plant. In fact, he was chief bottler of this big Coca-Cola plant. He was baptized in February. And he never let anybody know he was an Adventist for months. But he just worked it out so that he could get his Sabbath off. I mean, he's the boss. So he just worked it out so they never worked on Sabbath. About an hour before sundown, he let all of his employees go. This went on until almost the 4th of July. It was 4th of July weekend. It was on a Friday. And his boss called him in and says, "Ed, we got to work tomorrow. And I expect you to be here. We got a lot of big order. We got to get this done by Monday. And I want it done tomorrow." And Ed had to say, "Well, no, I can't do that." He said, "Why not?" He said, "I've been noticing that you haven't been working for the last 4 to 5 months on Saturday. You used to work all the time, but you don't work on Saturday. How come?" I just don't do that anymore." "I want to know why you don't work on Saturday." "Well, I just don't work." "All right, have you become one of those Seventh-day Adventists?" And Ed finally had to admit that he had. And this boss said to him, he furiously said, "Ed, that is the most nutty things I've ever heard from you. Listen, you come to work tomorrow or you're fired." Well, Ed called me up. He said, "What am I going to do?" I said, "Ed, do what Jesus wants you to do. He'll take care of you." We prayed a lot about it, and Ed finally decided, "I'm not working." So he didn't go to work. He didn't get fired, but his boss did something even more horrible. He went around to all those rough and tough men at that plant and said, "You know what's happened to Ed? This guy has become a fanatic. He has become a Seventh-day Adventist." And everybody started making fun of Ed. His boss made fun of him. Everybody made fun of Ed. Well, Ed, one thing he had was a very short fuse. I mean, what he could get upset, and it just finally got to him. And one day his boss came out there and he was working, and his boss said something, snide remark, and Ed just blew up. And he started cussing. And he cussed his boss out, and he cussed everybody out. And in the middle of his cussing, his boss said, "Ed, I didn't know Adventists were allowed to cuss." Then Ed really let his boss have it, and he got fired. Called me up, said, "Burton, I don't know. I feel horrible." He says, "You know," and he told me the story, and he says, "What really makes me feel bad is that I've let Jesus down." I said, "Ed, I'm going to come over and see you tonight." So I went over to see him. And, you know, we were talking. I told him about what I just started is praying, you know. And by that time, I was up to about 20 minutes a day. And I was excited, and God was directing us, you know. And I said, "Ed, you know, you need to, why don't you try this?" He said, "I got nothing else to do. You know, I'm going to do it." And he started. Well, to make a long story short, about 6 months later, now he went to another church because he lived close to Erie, Pennsylvania, about 20 miles from there, and about 60 miles from there. So I baptized him, and then he finally transferred to this church because it's a lot closer. But when he found out that we were leaving Pennsylvania and going to North Carolina, he called me up and said, "Burton, you can't leave until you come and sit down and talk to me. I got to tell you a story." I said, "Okay." So I went over there, and I had one of the most delightful evenings, and he told me this story. He said, "You know, Burton, I decided I was going to do that. Found a nice quiet spot." He said, "And I started talking to Jesus. Every day I talked to him." He said, "I started off with you 10 minutes. At first it was hard, but then it got to the place where it just kind of lengthened out." And he said, "You know, last week I discovered I looked at my watch and 35 minutes had gone by." But he said, "You know, I just kept praying. I started praying for my former boss, started praying for the employees, I prayed for my home. I started, you know, I prayed for my temper and everything." And he said, "And you know what? My former boss called me up after about a month and said, 'Ed, come back to work. We need you. It's a mess here.' And he gave me a raise in pay that's taking even care of that month I lost." But he said, "Burton, let me tell you what's really happened." He said, "Through my taking time and spending with Jesus every day, He's begun to change my personality. He said, you know those things that used to get me irritated and get me all upset and get me angry? He said, they run off me like water, and they were like water off a duck's back. He said, I've been taking, you know, the signs of the times, I stick it into the bathroom. He said, they're reading it. My boss told me the other day, that's a pretty good magazine you got there, Ed. And then he pointed to this chair, and he was sitting there and had a big picture of Jesus up there. He says, you see that chair? I said, yes. He said, that's where I spend my time with Jesus every day. See that picture? That's my inspiration. That's who I pray to. And this big old man had tears in his eyes and looking at me, and he says, oh, Burton, I can't thank you enough for helping me to find a better way to live. God changed it. You want to be a success for life? Prescription for greatness is number one, make your decision for Jesus. And then number two, stay with that decision for the rest of your life. Take some time, find some place, pray to Jesus. I want to challenge you. Do this 10 minutes a day. Watch and see what God will do in your life. You will find it exciting. Got to close. We're going to sing our closing song. And as we do, if there's someone here that feels like you want to make this initial decision, you just feel you got to ask Jesus to come into your life, I want to ask you, as we sing this song, to come forward. Just come right up here and join me.